October 27th, 1948. This is a day of special meaning to all Americans. This is Navy Day 1948. The eyes of 140 million people look to the sea, where America's first line of defense proudly displays its colors. Listen then, you on the destroyers, cruisers, submarines, carriers, and all the big and little ships and craft of the greatest Navy afloat. This is your day. Listen, you men who soar lightly through the heavens, brushing your wingtips against giant clouds with the audacity of a David. This, too, is your day. And if there is in heaven some method of celestial communication unknown by human minds and unheard by human ears, this is the day more than all the rest for you who died bravely in a half dozen wars so that we here could celebrate. It is Navy Day 1948 when America looks to the sea. The flight of memory is swifter than jet propulsion. With equal ease, memory takes us across 1,000 miles or back 100 years. So it is that we see through the eyes of memory the beginnings of this day. No one called it Navy Day on October 27, 1775. The American colonist who sits here at a wooden desk, diligently writing an entry in his diary with a quill pen by the flickering light of a homemade candle, he has no thoughts of a sea power greater than the mighty British fleet. But it is an important entry that he makes now. He picks up the pewter sand shaker from the desk, lightly sprinkles the grains across the parchment, and leans closer to the candle to read the words.
We have finally taken the step that will eventually determine our success as a new country. Just 14 days ago, the Continental Congress authorized 2 vessels to be prepared for sea, to be employed in such manner for the protection of the United Colonies as the Congress shall direct. We are now debating the establishment of a Marine Corps, and it seems likely that the legislation will pass. With men, with ships, and with the help of God, the United Colonies shall survive.
That was the beginning, but there are more days to follow. Memory takes us once again to cover an easy jump of 37 years. The first war of independence has been fought and won, but the peace was not sustained. Now again we face the mighty ships of the British fleet with a small naval force and a great amount of courage. The scene that spreads itself before us is not the vastness of an ocean, the pale blue of one of our great lakes. It's a month until Navy Day comes round, but this is the important day to us in 1812. Here in a lifeboat are less than 12 men. One of them, a tall officer with a blue flag clutched in his hands. A storm of shots whistles over the lifeboat. Near hits send up fountains of spray. Canisters splash the water. And Oliver Perry shields the flag with his body. When he takes command of a new ship and sends it through the British line like a shooting gallery, that naval flag is the one that remains flying above the smoke and blood on Lake Erie. You can see that flag today at the United States Naval Academy at Annapolis. It is pale blue like the waters of the Great Lakes. Its hem is torn like the rocky shores of Lake Erie. The lettering is crude, but the message that is emblazoned on that flag has echoed for 50 years the words of Captain James Lawrence.
Don't give up the ship. Sink her first. Don't give up the ship.
Once again, we take flight across the years, making only a few brief stops. Each October month brings with it a glimpse of a Navy slowly growing up, flexing its muscles as it begins to feel the strength that comes from the sea. Yes, into our Navy is coming some of the power that is contained in the ocean itself. These are important October days. These things that add up to Navy Day.
October 10th, 1845. Today, in a little wooden shed on the banks of Chesapeake Bay, the United States Navy opened a naval school. In Annapolis now are four academic instructors and a lieutenant to teach engineering and gunnery. Three midshipmen make up the student body.
October 1899. Ships of the United States fleet have sailed in triumph into New York, having fulfilled the nation's manifest destiny. The Spanish-American War is over. Cuba has been liberated. The Philippines have been occupied. The United States has ended its isolation from the world and become a great naval power. October 27, 1922. Today is the birthday of the late President Theodore Roosevelt, one of the best friends of the United States Navy, which he called the right arm of the country. In his honor, the Navy League of the United States has named October 27 as Navy Day.
Now it was official. This day we celebrate. For a few short years, America looked to the sea and across the sea at the bold attempts made by earnest men to maintain the peace so hardly won. Our Navy was not standing still in time of peace. It kept in condition like a prize fighter who knows that the title match is coming up. We didn't take too seriously this idea that some country might try to lick the world. We felt protected and isolated by those two great oceans. But in October of 1939, we saw Hitler's Wehrmacht unleashed. His Panzer Division swept across the broad plains of Poland. His Luftwaffe swarmed black in the sky. And in October of 1940, the British were valiantly withstanding decimation by Blitzkrieg. Holland, Belgium, Denmark, Norway, France, all had fallen. The United States became the arsenal of democracy, sending arms and supplies across the perilous Atlantic to the men still fighting for freedom over there. Then it came to us. December 7th, 1941. Now we were in the shooting. The title match was here, and we found ourselves on the defensive. But in those terrible early months, the Navy proved that it had the most valuable commodity of all, the essential secret weapon, plain fighting guts. Once again, America looked to the sea. But at times, our eyes were covered with the twin myopic scales of optimism and pessimism. The scene is a bar and grill a few months after the start of the war. The men are Americans. The words were common enough.
What'll it be, fellas?
Scotch and water.
Make it two.
Two scotches, okay.
You read the news today, Fred?
Yeah, I skimmed the headlines.
Yeah, still at it. Yeah, looks like we're losing out in the Philippines.
Yeah, but we'll get started pretty soon. It takes time for things to get rolling.
I don't know. They've taken about all they wanted already. When Australia goes, that's it.
Uh-uh, they can't keep on much longer. Tell you what I think. I'll give them just about 4 months longer.
No, Fred. Not 4 months. There are big battles ahead. Campaigns that eventually will drive the enemy back on his heels. But not in 4 months. It'll be over in 4 years, Fred.
Besides, we got things coming up they don't even know about.
Well, what do you mean?
Two scotches. Who's paying?
Here, take it out of this.
Both of them?
Yeah, yeah. Like I was saying, Joe, we got a lot of Navy they haven't even touched. Well, I read an article the other day that said we have over 7,000 different craft in our surface fleet alone.
7,000 ships. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a lot. But you want to know something, Fred? That's a drop in the bucket compared with what it's going to take to win this fight. Before it's over, before the enemy goes down for the count, our Navy is going to need and get nearly 100,000 vessels of all types. Yes, Fred, that Navy will grow 14 times over in the next 4 years.
I don't know. Those guys hang on like leeches. They think dying that way makes it a cinch of getting into heaven. Yeah, it's going to take a lot of men to beat them. Maybe we haven't got enough.
We already got a big Navy. It's getting bigger all the time. Lots of people volunteering every day. Why, I'll bet we have over 500,000 men in our Navy right now.
That's great, Fred. Great. But it's not enough. We need more men for 100,000 ships. We need more men for the Navy Air Arm. We started out with a couple of thousand planes. Before we're through, we'll have over 36,000 aircraft taking off from carriers and Navy bases all over the world. Yes, Fred, that 500,000 you mentioned will be doubled, redoubled, and doubled again. And before the final round is over, it's going to take 3 million Americans who don the Navy blue and finish the biggest job any Navy ever faced.
October 27, 1945. Today is Navy Day. Last week, in the smoky haze of mid-October, our ships came home again. Carriers, battleships, cruisers, destroyers, and submarines steamed into East Coast, West Coast, Gulf Coast ports. Seattle, San Francisco, New Orleans, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Boston, New York, while landing ships waddled up the rivers and canals to inland cities like St. Louis, Dubuque, Minneapolis, and St. Paul.
It was a spectacular return to the people of the People's Fleet, 90% manned by civilians in uniform. That was the way we had answered the call to the sea. Behind us now were the campaigns of Java Sea and Macassar Strait, Midway, Guadalcanal, and Savo Island, Sicily and Normandy, Tarawa, Macon, the Coral Sea, Kwajalein and Guam, the Philippines, Iwo Jima and Okinawa. We had come a long, perilous way since the enemy fired the first shot, the shot that backfired round the world. Well, that's just about the finish of this part of the story. But what of today, October 27th, Navy Day, 1948? We walk the streets today at peace, while the peacetime Navy continues to mount guard. Overhead, we hear a Navy plane, and we think of the eyes and ears of the fleet, ceaseless patrols over ice-bound wastes and coral shores. We step along the decks of mighty warships on guided inspection tours, and we think of security along shore, safety for convoys, undramatic but necessary weather patrols. There are new words in this Atomic Age dictionary, words of seabees and waves and spars, words of radar and snorkel tubes, words of hundreds of places all over the world that we had never known before a few years ago. Thank you, Navy. Thank you for delivering to us the trident of global maritime supremacy. As of today, America rules the waves. You have protected the ideals of independence, liberty, justice, and democracy for 150 years. And it is not because the calendar reads October 27th that we send you this salute. Not for just this day, but always in the future as in the past, America fastens her eyes on the first line of defense. Yes, Navy, America looks to the sea.
You have just heard Look to the Sea, starring Preston Foster as narrator. Supporting players included Howard Culver, Irvin Lee, Clayton Post, John T. Smith, and Ben Wright. Original music was composed by Michelle Michelet with the orchestra under the direction of Michelle Perrier. This special Navy Day salute was written by Robert C. Vinson, produced and directed by James W. Talbot. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Friends and pals forever, give on it with your dick.